The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Pat Kenny Show with Anton in for Pat. So how far would you go to protect your child? Richard Madeley's new thriller, Father's Day, delves into the dark depths of online deception and the lengths one father will go to for vengeance. Here to discuss his gripping new novel is the author himself, journalist and television presenter Richard Madeley. Richard, good morning.
Good morning to you. How are you doing?
I'm very good. Richard, can I ask you a philosophical question about your career choice?
Yeah.
If you do TV, one of the great advantages of it is you do a show and then it's over. It doesn't hang over you. There are no reports to file. You just get to do it again the next day. You've opted for the exact opposite, the kind of job that requires you to just grind away at things for months. Why?
That's a really original question. Nobody's asked me that before. And you're absolutely right, particularly about daytime television or breakfast television. It really is file and forget. I personally find, I don't know if you're the same, that if you ask me what was on the show earlier that day, I'll struggle to tell you. I can't remember. And I remember once I was doing a book show with Judy, and we featured Rocket Man, which was the biography of Elton John. And I said to her on camera, I wish we'd interviewed Elton John back in the day when we were doing, you know, This Morning and Richard and Judy on Channel 4. And she looked at me as if I was mad, and she said, "We did." I said, "Did we?" She said, "Yes, we did. We did him live about 5 years ago." And you know what? Even now, I have no memory. So you're absolutely right. It's an instantly wipeable blackboard, live television. And the exact opposite, as you say, with writing a book. Well, I suppose the thing about factual television, news television, which is what I do now, is that you are confined to the facts. You can have an opinion, I guess, and we're allowed that on ITV, which you're not on the BBC. But you've got to be careful about that and treat that carefully. But with a book, with a novel, you can fly. For example, I personally am completely against the reintroduction of the death penalty. Occasionally that comes up as a subject. And if there was a referendum on the subject, my tick in the no box would go through the paper. I'd write it so hard. And yet in this book, my hero, some may see him as an anti-hero, I think a lot will see him as a hero, actually commits an extrajudicial execution. He kills a man, he executes him for a crime he's committed because he doesn't trust the law to do the right job. So he kills the guy. Now, that's completely adrift from my personal feelings on the subject of execution, but it was huge fun to write and huge fun to, to pretend, if you like, and huge fun to play with the idea of, well, maybe sometimes, just now, I don't think this is true, but maybe sometimes an extrajudicial execution is called for.
Well, hang on, go back. Maybe sometimes an extrajudicial execution is called for.
In fiction.
That caveat is important.
Yes, in fiction. No, not in real life. So, very quickly, the book opens in a real place, actually. It's a Roman amphitheatre just outside a place called Cirencester in the Cotswolds. It used to be called Quirinium because it was the Roman capital of Britain back at two millennia ago. And they built this enormous Colosseum. It's almost as big as the Colosseum in Rome. And I'm amazed it's not more famous because it's still there in one piece. You can see it instantly what it is. It's covered in grass now, but it's obviously a Colosseum. Anyway, the book opens at dawn on a midsummer morning, and a policeman and a policewoman have arrived at this place because they've had a call to say that there have been some odd noises coming from this auditorium, screams and yelps. So they go in, and there's nothing there. It's completely deserted, except there's something in the middle sticking up, a kind of a huge wooden X about 8 feet high. And as they get closer, they realize that there's something on the other side of it. So the older copper, the bloke, says, "Look, I'll have a look at this," because he gets a feeling. And he walks around to the other side of this big wooden X, and it's a crucifixion. And there's a body on it, upside down, dead. And that's the way that the Romans executed saints like St. Peter on X-shaped crosses upside down, the ultimate sort of humiliation. And you end that first chapter with this two huge questions. One, who is the dead guy? And two, three questions. Who crucified him and why? And it's not a plot spoiler because it's all explained in the next two or three chapters because the book's kind of back to front, I hope. We discover the answer to those questions very quickly. The dead man is called Arthur Scanlon. He's a middle-aged guy, lives with his parents in a box room in Bristol. And he's a troll. He's an internet troll of a particularly wicked kind. His thing is to catfish teenage girls. He gate crashes. He infiltrates teenage chat rooms with girls. And he impersonates one of them. He calls himself Rosie, and he's brilliant at it. He's really good at the teen speak. And his thing is to find the most vulnerable, troubled girl in the group, hive her off, develop a one-to-one relationship with her online over the coming weeks and months. And his thing, he gets his sick jollies from one, getting her to start self-harming by pretending to be like her and talking about self-harming. And then he tries to get them to take their own lives. And in this particular case, he succeeded. And the man who's crucified him single-handedly is the girl's father. And what happened was the girl took her own life. She didn't leave a note. Nobody had the faintest idea why she did it in her bedroom one day. It's just a terrible tragedy. Coroner records an open verdict. Nobody knows why it happened. But 2 years on, the father, he's in this girl's bedroom, having a little retrospective and a memory of his beloved, beloved 15-year-old daughter. And he discovers a secret laptop. She had a secret laptop that nobody knew about, that she used only to communicate with Rosie, this 15-year-old girl, who in fact is a 44-year-old man. And he hacks into it. He powers it up after all this time. He hacks into it and he sees all these messages and he realizes instantly what was going on, really, that it was catfishing. And he vows revenge to track the guy down, to abduct him, to take him to the auditorium and to crucify him. And that's what he does. He's an expert in Roman history. He writes plays about Roman history and he writes books. He's a household name and he's a very good man, this father. He's a very decent man, but he's driven to avenge his poor, dead, produced daughter. And then we're off. And those are the kind of the key questions as the police investigation closes in on him. I'm inviting the reader to check their visceral response. Do they want the father to be caught? And if he is caught, do they want him to be prosecuted? Or do they want him to get away with it? And are they secretly glad that Arthur Scanlon got what was coming to him? Right, sorry, I'll shut up now.
Why such bleak territory?
Well, I happen to think that trolls and trolling online is a very modern-day curse. It didn't really exist in the past. We had poison pen letters, I suppose. That was about the closest you could get to it. But the modern troll has, it seems to me, has polluted social media thoroughly. Twitter, for example. When I first joined Twitter, around about 2008, 2009, it was a really fun place. No, yeah, about then. It was a really fun place to be. It was like going into a new pub on the corner with lots of friendly people in there, funny people. You could swap jokes, swap anecdotes, information. And very quickly, it was corrupted by trolls who used it for their own horrible, odious end, either just being grotesquely vile and insulting or doing the kind of thing that Arthur Scanlon in my book does. And I think that people are very, very angry about it. And they're very angry about the fact that on the whole, because of the anonymity that the internet offers, trolls get away with it. And they go further and further. And I just felt, and I read a story about, not dissimilar to the one I've just outlined, although it didn't end in a death, but it was sexual abuse online. And a poor teenage girl was horribly abused. And the guy was caught, very rarely, he was caught and put in jail. And that's what gave me the idea. And I just felt, on behalf of everybody who was enraged as I am by the way that the trolls have taken over the internet, I wanted to write a revenge novel on one of them.
Do you find it difficult to go from the work of writing something like that to returning to an even keel? Because I assume if you have to immerse yourself in a plot line of that nature, when you close the laptop, you can't be left in great form when you're writing the more difficult passages.
No, it wasn't hard at all. It's a good question because I'm a news journalist. I joined my first local paper when I was 16 as a trainee reporter, a cub reporter. And I spent the first 20 years of my career in newspapers and then local radio and then regional television in the UK in hard news. That's all I did. I was a reporter. And over those 20 years, I covered a lot. I covered a lot of tragedies, a lot of violence, a lot of terribly sad stories, a lot of disgusting stories. And I suppose, like any journalist, and I suppose to some extent like a copper, you can't take that home with you. So you do tend to compartmentalize in your head. You do tend to sort of live in different bubbles. And I would certainly find after a particularly, say, tragic news story that I'd have to cover, say, the death of a child of some kind, you can't take it home and dwell on it. You have to see, well, I've reported on it, I've told the story, I've written it or broadcast it, and now I'm going to the pub. And it's very much the same kind of psychological discipline when you're writing a book, which I have to say, I've obviously covered the darkness of Father's Day, my book. There is a lot of light and shade in it. There is actually, believe it or not, quite a lot of humour. And there's a romance as well, quite a powerful romance. So it isn't all death and destruction and doom.
Finally, Richard, in terms of the process that you go through, I remember asking or talking to Jeffrey Archer about his 957,000 rereads and rewrites of his books. Are you one and done in book terms, or do you also go back over it and back over it and back over?
No, absolutely not. Life's too short. I write and kind of edit and sub as I go. I always feel that my first draft should be good enough. My editor doesn't ever and sends me back the manuscript, usually with notes in the margin linked to a kind of a circle around a sentence, which says things like clunky or, you know, sort of not thought through. Great. So I pay full attention to that, and I amend it. And that doesn't take long. That takes about 2 or 3 weeks. And then as far as I'm concerned, that's it. And I will not return to it. And even if I wake up and then I think, oh, maybe I should have got so-and-so to do that, the hell with it. It's done. It's gone. I'm, you know, as I say, life's too short.
Richard, thank you very much for coming on this morning. The new book is Father's Day, the author Richard Madeley. And obviously a lot of the topics there that we have discussed in the plotline of that book, if any of those happen to affect you in real life, you can contact Pieta House on their free 24/7 crisis helpline, 1800-247-247, or text HELP to 51444, or alternatively the Samaritans, of course, 116-123.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.